Blog Talk Radio.
Pretty interesting subject, I think, anyway. Before we get started, I want to introduce my co-host for this evening, Ms. Karen D., and she is the movie maven. And I am your host, Greg Morgan, and I am the real movie guy. So we're going to be talking about movies that deal with a certain subject of, well, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. The enemy of my enemy is my enemy. Now, basically, the essence of this really means that two enemies get together because they have a mutual goal to get past an enemy that's giving both of them grief, bottom line. And the best way to get rid of this enemy is to join forces and combat the enemy head on. So we're going to talk about some movies that deal with that subject matter. Now, unfortunately, our third wheel, our third peg on our wheel, Mr. Larry Domkowski, he is the must-see movies film critic on the internet. He won't be able to join us this evening. So we just want to say best of wishes and feel better, Larry, and maybe next week. Okay, Karen, it's you and me. Dun.
Uh-oh, mano a mano.
Mano y mano. Imano. No, that's different.
Okay. Too many manos. There's one too many manos there.
Yeah. Mano imano equals plural.
Yeah, that must be it.
Could be something like that. Well, we picked some films for today. Each one of us, the task was to find a film or two that embodied the theme for this evening. So, let me ask you, Karen, what movies did you find?
Well, the main movie that I'd like to bring to everyone's attention tonight is a movie called Catch Me If You Can. It was released in 2002 with Leonardo DiCaprio, Christopher Walken, and Tom Hanks. Two other movies that I'd like to mention are In the Heat of the Night, a 1967 movie with Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger, and then the third movie that I'd like to mention is Trading Places. So even in a comedy, the enemy of my enemy can be my enemy. And that movie is with Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd and Jamie Lee Curtis, and I can't remember off the top of my head. I want to say it was released in the 80s, 1983. So those are the movies that I want to talk about. What about you, Greg?
Well, I went back into my archive of films. I'm being silly. I'm sorry. Okay, I went back.
Have quite the extensive archive.
I do, actually. It's actually quite cool, but I won't bore everybody with all that. But basically, I had seen this movie years ago. This movie, the first movie, my main film that I want to talk about, came out in the early 2000s. And for those of you who have listened to a few of our shows in the past, you kind of know that I'm into the vampire werewolf thing. So I chose a movie that exemplifies the enemy of my enemy is my enemy, and I chose Blade 2. Basically, the scenario in this film is Blade is a vampire slayer. He's a vampire hunter. And in this film, the vampires that he's hunting have put together a force to try to fight off or fend off the advances that Blade is projecting. But then something else happens that now the vampires are not seeking Blade to get rid of him. They're seeking Blade for his help. So that's the movie that I chose as a main movie, and we'll get into more detail about what's going on there momentarily. And then the second film I only have two, and that is the film called The Undefeated. Now, this film came out in 1969, excuse me. I didn't see it in 1969. I think I saw it in the early 70s when it was on television. But I was taken back. It was John Wayne as he's getting a little older. And I kind of like the John Wayne Civil War / cowboy stuff and westerns of the past. But I found that this was kind of interesting, and it definitely fits the scenario. We've got the Union soldiers and the Confederate soldiers actually joining forces to fight a common foe. So I thought this movie was appropriate and poignant. So those are my two films that we'll talk about in a little bit more detail as we go along. Excuse me for just a moment. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I am supporting a cold. So, Karen, are you excited about the films that you chose?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the films are all good films for me. Do you want me to talk about mine first, or do you want to go first for a change?
Well, let's do this. Because I have two movies and you have three, and we're missing our Larry this time, why don't you go first, and then we'll go like every other one. How's that?
Okay. Well, let me talk about Catch Me If You Can. I remember when this movie came out in 2002, and I didn't really care much about it one way or the other. Storyline didn't especially grab me, and I'm not a huge Leonardo DiCaprio fan, although, I mean, I think he's a good actor, but, I mean, he's just not the type of person whose characters necessarily really grab me. I don't go out of my way to see a Leonardo DiCaprio movie. I like Tom Hanks as an actor, but again, unless it's a really interesting subject matter, I'm not going to go to the movies to see a Tom Hanks movie necessarily, or a Christopher Walken movie. But I'll tell you how I got interested in this movie, and it was because of my day job. I work on economic crimes policies in my day job. I work on identity theft issues and general fraud issues and things like that. And I was at a meeting where, you know, members of the law enforcement community were talking about economic crimes, and Frank Abagnale, I cannot remember how to pronounce that man's last name, but anyway, the subject of the movie Catch Me If You Can, Frank Abagnale, I think, or something along those lines, was at the meeting giving a speech about, you know, the coming trends with regard to economic crimes. And while he was talking about that, he also talked about the movie Catch Me If You Can. And I was interested because, you know, I thought, well, you know, this is a movie treatment, so how true can it be? And he said, you know, the movie largely stuck to what actually happened to him.
Wow.
That's when I got interested. interested in the movie. And he's widely quoted as saying that the movie's about 80% true, which is a pretty high percentage for a movie based, quote-unquote, based on a true story.
Right.
And he has just, I mean, a really incredible story about a man who, or a boy, really, who somehow managed to counterfeit and basically steal millions of dollars, like well over $4 million, and this is in the 60s into the 70s, by impersonating people, and he managed to pull all of this off before he turned 19. And the way in which he went about counterfeiting checks and passing bad checks and adopting these fake personas was really brilliant. He impersonated a pilot, a doctor, and a state's attorney.
Wow.
Yeah. And he did this for years, and until he was finally caught in France. And this is just the basic story is about this FBI agent who got interested in how he was pulling off these bad checks, and then started basically chasing him around the country and finally around the world, and how he caught up to him. And the interesting part of the movie that doesn't really happen until towards the end is that the cop in this instance, I can't remember the cop's name, but the FBI guy who was chasing him, they kind of struck up a friendship. It was very strange. Even while, you know, Frank was running around and trying to escape detection, and he talked about this at this meeting that I was at. He said, the sense that you don't get, and I don't think the movie brings this out very well, but it was true, was even though he was very successful pulling off these crimes, it was an incredibly isolating experience, extremely lonely, because he was constantly afraid of being detected, so he couldn't afford to make friends. He couldn't afford to socialize with people for very long for fear of being found out. And he also, you know, kind of, on some level, I mean, he was a kid, really, kind of needed to be able to talk to somebody who actually knew who he was. And that's where this FBI guy came along, because the FBI guy knew who he was and that he wasn't going to be, he couldn't pull the wool over the FBI guy's eyes. And they kind of started talking. And it was kind of like, you know, the FBI guy was divorced, he had children, but he hardly ever saw them. Frank was the product of a divorce. He didn't see his mother remarried, so he hardly ever saw him. He was an only child, but he didn't see his father nearly as often as he wanted to. He was extremely lonely. And the FBI guy was kind of lonely, too, and that's how they struck up this really odd friendship. And while Frank was in prison, He almost died in a French prison. That he was caught in France. He almost died there because the conditions were just terrific. They finally got him extradited to the United States and put him in maximum security in Georgia. And Frank, the cop, the FBI guy, kept visiting him, and then he would sort of like bring him some cases that he found it difficult to solve, and just kind of pick Frank's brain. And Frank had all this knowledge about how people were doing things. So then finally the FBI said, listen, why don't you come work, why don't you serve the remainder of your sentence out by working for us? You'll be in the custody of the FBI. If you run, we'll slam you down, but you could work for the FBI. And he kind of didn't want to, but he kind of didn't want to be in prison either, so he said yes. And he worked for the FBI he still works for the FBI as a consultant, but that was like 30 years later. He still works for the FBI. you know, his son is in law enforcement and the other son's a doctor, for real. So, you know, he went from this incredible criminal, you know, life to being an absolute pillar of the community. And one of the greatest assets to law enforcement in terms of ferreting out fraud. He works on multi-million dollar Medicaid fraud cases, and that, you know, so he's one of the greatest assets that the FBI has. So that's how I got interested in this movie. But he, you know, he was this kid. He was this child. And basically what precipitated all this was that his parents got divorced. It completely threw him. And they, and the divorce lawyers were like, well, you need to pick a parent to live with. Pick a father, pick your father or your mother, but pick one. And he didn't want to pick one. And he ran away. And he literally needed to something to live on. So he started trying to figure out how to get money, and passing bad checks seemed like a really good way to do it. As it turned out, it was. And then being a pilot seemed pretty cool because there was no security. It was pretty easy to get a uniform. It was pretty easy to, you know, fake credentials and to fake emblems and badges. That's when he would buy, like, model Pan Am planes and soak them in bath water and peel the decals off to put them on checks so that they would look like payroll checks and they would pay him. I mean, that's one of the things he did. He did lots more than that. But, yeah, I mean, absolutely brilliant, brilliant youngster who was turned, you know, who was turned into this life of crime, but a kind of, you know, like a real nice guy underneath all that, you know. So it was very, it's very strange. But yeah, that's why that, that's, have, you know, hearing him in person just really made his story intriguing, especially because when he was at the meeting, he kept, what he kept saying was that, you know, my story sounds really fascinating and interesting, but let me be clear that what I did was cowardly, what I did was wrong. And it takes a lot more courage to, you know, to do the right things to raise a family and to contribute to society in a positive way. That takes far more courage than the things that I did. I got away with a lot of things, but that didn't make me a man. It's when I stopped getting away with things. That's when I became a man. And I just thought that was fascinating.
It sounds fascinating. Especially, I think it's really cool to be able to meet the real people who are, whose stories are impacting us by through viewership and trying to understand what we're watching and seeing. It's great to have that as a reference because now it adds validity to what you saw, and I think that's great.
Yeah.
It's funny, this particular movie reminds me, I'm wondering if this TV show that came on, I think it was the USA Network, was influenced. It sounds like it was definitely influenced by the real-life story of this gentleman, and Catch Me If You Can, because it did air after the movie came out, and that's White Collar.
Maybe.
FBI agent, his white-collar crime, and this guy is, you know, the person he's been trying to find and capture all along. And they strike up a good relationship between the two of them, and he invites him to be part of the experience of the FBI to help them find other white-collar criminals. So I thought it was a pretty good parallel there.
Yeah.
Wow, that was cool. That sounds like a, you know, I saw the movie when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that much of it, and maybe I wasn't overly impressed by it. And
right.
I don't think at the time when I saw that I was a quote-unquote biopic. So I like biopics typically, so I'll try to take a look at that film again and see if I can get a little bit more worth from what you've said. Maybe I should pay a little bit more attention, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought I'd seen the film, frankly, not in the movies, but at a later point, because, I mean, the movie's 13 years old. And then I watched it today, and I'm like, I don't remember any of this stuff. So, If I saw it, I completely forgot about it. But it's actually well done. I mean, Christopher Walken was nominated for numerous awards, including Academy. He got an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor in this movie. And there were Amy Adams was in this movie playing a love interest of Leonardo DiCaprio's when she was very young. Who else? I mean, Tom Hanks does. I've never really seen him act badly. I've seen him in maybe not the greatest vehicles, but this is a very good vehicle, and he was really good as the FBI agent who, you know, doggedly pursues and somehow, in a really strange way, also befriends Frank. There were very good acting performances in this. It's sort of like one of those not real in-your-face movies. And the fact that Steven Spielberg was the director, he made it a point to hew pretty closely to the actual story. It was based on a book that Frank Abagnale wrote. So he has a writer's credit on this movie, too.
Well, that's good. That's good. Wow. Oh, that was pretty interesting. See, got me wanting to watch it. I'm hoping that some of the listeners out there are feeling the same way.
Yeah.
Let me just take a stab at my film real quick here. The film that I picked was Blade 2. Now, Blade was made in a trilogy of films starring Wesley Snipes as a half-breed. He's half human, half vampire. His mother was bitten when he was young, and as she dies, he was born. I shouldn't say when he was young. As she dies, he's born. And so the essence of the vampire essence that took her became part of his life. And he swore to help rid the world of vampires. So his constant mission, his only mission, is to fight vampires. Now, in this second movie, Blade 2, a strange occurrence is happening where normally we see vampires feeding on the helpless humans. Now there's somebody trying to feed on the vampires. And so the vampires are like bewildered, don't know what to do. So they find a way to come to Blade and ask for his help. They have put together a squad that they are utilizing to actually do away with Blade. That's the irony in this film, is that the vampires have found their group of people that they feel would help them stop and or eliminate Blade ultimately. And they come to Blade's domicile to try to talk to him, and just like anything else, he thinks they're attacking. So he's fighting them off. And here it is, this group that's put together to get rid of Blade, they're having a hard time fighting him in this, 3-1. And he's fending them off with pretty much a lot of ease here. So might not have been the best scenario for them, but they were trying anyway. So they come to ask him for a truce in their situation where he's hunting them, they're hunting him, to come together to hunt a creature that is far more superior, a threat to not just vampires but the world in general. And the vampires are like, well, you know, we can't seem to fend this off ourselves, so we need someone else to help us figure this out. So they come to Blade to do that. It's a pretty good movie, especially if you're into action. Blade 1 was a really good movie, I thought, and the storyline is pretty decent. This is a Marvel film, I should say a Marvel character from the Marvel Universe in Blade, and so he's decided that he's going to help the vampires, but one of the sayings that he has in the movie, which I think is a very good saying, is keep your enemies close. Keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer. And so he figures, well, if anything, if it's a trap that they're trying to use against him, he's prepared. If it's not, then he's got to figure out how they're all going to prepare for something that the vampires are afraid of. Because prior to this, the vampires weren't afraid of too much except him. So this fits well into the scenario of the enemy of my enemy is my enemy. Blade and the vampires are sworn enemies, and now there's a entity out there that is vampire-like and that's sucking all the blood out of vampires. So neither one of them want this to survive. So they come together to try to fight this thing. And the essence of this thing has a lot of twists and turns. The reason why this thing exists in the first place, we find out later. So there's a little treachery that's going on here. And we find that the vampires who are fighting with Blade are coming to, some of them, coming around to actually realizing that, you know, this guy is a force of nature that they need right now. And then there are others who are not so happy that he's around. So I thought this was a perfect film for the, at least for the theme anyway. What do you think, Karen?
I think it was too. I mean, it's always intriguing to me when you have, you know, these sort of they're sort of like out of the box type characters, like vampires are sort of, you know, they're not like your typical normal person, but they're forced to kind of adopt some of the characteristics that, you know, just ordinary people adopt. Like they got to find a way to cooperate when that's not in their nature, you know, they've got to find a way to sort of like build consensus and, you know, that, you know, so that's always intriguing, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting that vampires, who typically in the films that I've seen and the folklore, are typically at the top of the food chain. And now in a situation where they're not, it's interesting to watch them be desperate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're not just desperate, truly afraid of what's about to occur. And the twists and turns of this film, especially toward the latter part of the film, we find out the nature of this beast that they're afraid of and its regenerative powers. You know, vampires, making vampires takes however long it takes the next day. This is a situation where it's only taking hours to rejuvenate these creatures or generate these creatures. And so now their learning curve is minimized. They don't have a lot of time to figure it out, because the more they delay, the faster these things are coming to existence. And so it's taken a lot of effort, not just to work together, but to figure out what they've got to do, get rid of these creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've run out of time, and so I hope you'll join us on our after show, which is on Google+, and it is the Hangouts on Air. And if you have a chance, please kind of go over there or listen to our show on our YouTube channel. It is the A Real Point of View. So A Real Point of View on YouTube and A Real Point of View on Hangouts on Air on Google+. So thanks, everybody, for listening in here on Blog Talk Radio, and we hope to see you later on tonight. And definitely check out Blade 2 and also check out, what's your film, Karen?
Catch Me If You Can.
That's right. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for listening here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a good night, and we'll see you next week. Same bat channel. Okay, I won't go there. That's silly. Okay, but take care, everybody. We appreciate you listening. Take care.